We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It's an insider's look at the NBA and the culture surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yeah, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
The Volume.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. With same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more, don't miss out as the NBA postseason winds down. So, lots of great odds for the second round. If you still think the Nuggets are going to come back and beat the Timberwolves, you can get them right now at plus 105. Thunder Mavs starts here shortly. And if you like the Mavs to win that series, you can get them at minus 105. And if you're new to DraftKings, you got to check this out. New customers bet $5 to get 150 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code HOOPS. That's H-O-O-P-S. That's code HOOPS for new customers to get 150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY to 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario, bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. All right, welcome to Hoops Tonight here at The Volume. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope all of you guys are having a great week. Jam-packed show for you tonight. The most shocking playoff game that I can ever remember seeing in my time as a basketball fan as the Wolves go up 2-0 in Denver without Rudy Gobert. We're going to break that game down. And then one of the worst calls that I've ever seen. Probably not the worst, but certainly on the list. An illegal screen at the end of the Knicks-Pacers game. We're going to mainly focus on the basketball there, but I've got a little bit of a rant, not based on that specific call, but just officials in general around the NBA, because that's becoming a little bit of a problem. But a jam-packed night of NBA basketball, we're going to break it all down. You guys know the drill. Before we get started, subscribe to our brand new YouTube channel so you don't miss any more of our videos. Follow me on Twitter at _JasonLT so you guys don't miss any show announcements. Don't forget about our podcast feed wherever you get your podcasts under Hoops Tonight. And last but not least, keep dropping mailbag questions in those YouTube comments. All right, let's talk some basketball. So again, as I said in the open, I have never been more shocked by a playoff result than this one. I have the defending champs in a must-win game, at home, the defensive anchor who made many of the biggest plays in game one is out for the birth of his child, and they get the living shit kicked out of them. Not only that, the Nuggets completely fall apart mentally in the process. I just can't ever remember. I've seen crazy sequences. Like, we saw two of them at the end of that Sixers-Knicks series, right? Like a couple games that get quite literally snatched victory from the jaws of defeat, so to speak. I've seen crazy sequences. I've seen crazy plays. I've never seen a more shocking playoff result than this one. Even like looking back at like some other ones recently, like remember when the Phoenix Suns went into that game seven against Luka and the Mavs and Luka just made him quit. Like, at least you can look at that and go like, well, Devin Booker and Chris Paul, neither of those guys are like real superstar level players. And Luka Doncic is, there's a huge like mental advantage that Luka has. He's just the best player on the floor by a mile. And he just went in there and snatched their soul, right? Like it was a shocking result in the dynamic that took place and how dramatic it was. But like you wouldn't have been surprised, right? To think that Luka could do that to another team. It just doesn't make sense. Nikola Jokic is the best player in the world. The Denver Nuggets are the defending champs, and they've shown championship mettle in so many different situations. And I want to just throw that credit to the Minnesota Timberwolves. Because I, in addition to never being more shocked about a playoff result, I don't think I've ever been more wrong about a basketball team than I was about the Minnesota Timberwolves. This was a team that I just took too much stock in their evidence from the regular season. I focused too much on how limited their offense was, especially in late game situations, too much stock in Ant's age and whether or not he'd be ready to lead a playoff run like this, too much stock in some of their issues closing games in general on both ends of the floor. I focused way too much on that, and I missed a simple thing that tilted Minnesota's way, and they took advantage of it, and they're running with it. And that is when the league, right around halfway through the season, started to tilt things in terms of officiating more in the direction of the defense, which is something I think is great for the game, something that all of us have been begging for a long time, as that inflated, offensively minded league was getting a little bit unwatchable at times. And there's still some remnants of it. Like, we've seen some of the officiating over the course of this playoff run, especially in like grifty stuff, right? There's still some remnants of it, but the league tilting in that direction was something that desperately needed to happen. In Minnesota, and we should have seen this coming, and to you Minnesota Timberwolves fans who saw it coming, kudos to you, because I missed it. But they took advantage of those rule changes, and they've leaned into it from the opening tip. They're grabbing, they're holding, they're hand-checking, they're being physical, they're top-locking to prevent guys from going on screens, they're picking up full court, they're pressuring everybody all over the floor. They're pressuring Jokic full court with Naz Reid half the time. Like, they are leaning into it. They understand what, you know, and this is something that I talk about a lot with basketball teams. Like, understand what your advantage is and lean into it. Don't go away from your advantage. Lean into your advantage. Minnesota knows their advantage is their defensive capability, their size, their athleticism, and their overall defensive talent. They're leaning into that, and they're reaping the dividends here in the postseason. I've never been more wrong about a basketball team. I had a take, probably one of my worst takes as a basketball analyst, when I said that the Timberwolves had about the same chance to beat Denver as LA. God, that was stupid. Like, I've never been more wrong about a team. I'm completely floored. And so shout out to the Minnesota Timberwolves, man. I owe them an apology. In addition, they are perfectly constructed to beat the Denver Nuggets. Like, it's honestly kind of diabolical when you think about it. Like, Tim Conley knows firsthand. He must have known that Jokic was coming. And obviously, he was there for at least one of the MVP runs, if I remember correctly. But like, he had to have known. And he went into Minnesota and he constructed a team to beat the Denver Nuggets. And what's crazy is, like, everyone was really down on the Rudy Gobert trade. I was down on it right when it happened, but I immediately liked it during the season because I loved that dynamic of the elite perimeter defenders, Anthony Edwards, Jaden McDaniels, and Rudy Gobert. But where I was wrong again there is I was like, okay, but the two bigs thing is stupid. You got to trade Karl Towns. And now in retrospect, I'm watching that late first half post up where Jokic is posting up Naz Reid. And he goes to his left shoulder hook, and Naz just kind of bullies him off of his spot and blocks him on a hook shot. And Jokic gets the ball back and barely gets another one off and just flings it up at the rim. And Minnesota gets the rebound and they're running the other way. And I'm like, this is genius. They're constructed to beat Denver. They have two guys in Naz Reid and Karl Towns who are both big and strong enough to flatten out Jokic's post-ups. He can't go through them. And then when they're healthy, they have Rudy Gobert on the back line. It's like Jokic, we didn't put nearly enough stock in what Jokic was saying after game one. I need two of me. You're damn right. Because Minnesota is literally just layering size and athleticism on that Denver front line, and it's working. It's diabolical stuff from Tim Conley. Went into Minnesota and built a roster to beat the Denver Nuggets, and then you add to that a tweak in the NBA's officiating that this team grabbed a hold of, and they're leaning into their strength, and they're running with it. It's so impressive to me. It really comes down to this. Because of Jaden McDaniels and Nickeil Alexander-Walker and Anthony Edwards, they can guard Jamal Murray really well. And we're going to get into that in more detail in a minute. That's not the calf muscle. He's in jail right now. Two, they can guard Jokic well. So since they can guard Jamal well and they can guard Jokic well and they've got that two-man game under wraps, now all of a sudden it's putting a bigger offensive responsibility on the other players. And it's you're expecting Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Michael Porter Jr., and Aaron Gordon to shoulder more of an offensive load. It's just not going to work. I will not declare the series over because I have too much respect for the defending champs, and I'm really curious to see the post game presser stuff. I want to see where Jamal Murray and Michael Malone, where their heads are at. We're going to get to that in a minute. I won't write them off, but like. I don't know how you could pick against Minnesota at this point. They're like Denver doesn't have anything they can do. There's no trump card. There's no adjustment. There's no nothing. Michael Malone and Jokic and all those guys, they used to talk a lot about how we've seen everything. We've seen everything. You haven't seen this. You don't have an adjustment for this. The only adjustment is to meet their physicality, which we're going to talk about here in a little bit. But I was wrong. I can't put it any more flatly. I was wrong about the Minnesota Timberwolves. And here's how wrong I was. If they're allowed to defend with this level of physicality, I think they'll win the trophy. You think Dallas or Oklahoma City is going to magically hold up well under this physical onslaught? You think Boston is? You think Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are just going to eat these guys up? I don't. Do you think Jalen Brunson by himself or the Pacers guards are going to magically solve this Minnesota defense? If they are allowed to guard like this with this level of physicality, they are going to hoist the Larry O'Brien trophy. It's like down the roster too. Like I was blown up. There was a possession with Michael Porter Jr. on the left wing in I think the third quarter where Mike Conley, the smallest player on the Timberwolves, had him pump faking at ghosts and jacking up a contested leaner. And I'm like, Mike Conley's locked in. Karl Towns is locked in. Naz Reid is a guy that's had some defensive limitations over the years. Now he's got a role here in this series where he can be, banging with Jokic. So it's more of a matchup he can handle. But even the guys on this roster that are like historically not great defensive players are like just playing the best defense of their career. It is a cultural thing from the top down. These guys want it. You can tell they want the trophy and they are willing to beat the hell out of you to get it. And someone's got to figure out a way to stop them or they're just going to do it. And here's the crazy part too. We're focusing on the defense. Anthony Edwards pours in another efficient 27 points. He's been the best player in the NBA in these playoffs. He's literally playing like the best player in the world. Karl Towns, another efficient 27. That's the major subplot here. We're all focused on the defense. Their offense has been awesome. Their offense has been awesome over the course of this playoff run. They're knocking down three-point shots. They're driving and kicking and making good reads. Their shot creators are aggressive and initiating contact and really being the aggressor. Like they're getting consistent production off the bench from Naz and Nickeil Alexander-Walker. They're playing at an insanely high level right now. Think about how crazy that is. They've won six straight postseason games. Four of them were against Kevin Durant, Bradley Beal, Devin Booker, and the last two were against the undisputed best player in the world, although Ant's trying to corner that territory right now, and Jamal Murray, the guy who's literally lit up everybody else in the league for the last 2 years. It's unbelievable. I'm completely stunned. Never been more wrong about a basketball team. On the Nuggets front, I was equally shocked tonight by how Denver fell apart. They completely crumbled mentally early in the game, too. I couldn't believe what I was seeing when Ant drives to the basket and KCP, who was late on his rotation and jumped vertically but in the charge circle, so there's no universe where that's an offensive foul, and Ant just jumps into his body and makes a layup. And Michael Malone comes screaming out onto the court, yelling at the ref in his face, like lost his damn mind over a play that was very clearly not an offensive foul. If anything, Ant should have gone to the line because KCP jumped and met him in the charge circle. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, what are you doing? You're supposed to be the leader. You're supposed to be calm and under control. You just bum rushed the ref and screamed in his face. That very easily could have been a double tech, let alone a tech. He could have been kicked out of the game. He's very lucky that he didn't get a technical at all in that situation. And immediately I'm like registering that. I'm like, okay, Denver's shook right now. And then a few possessions later, on another physical defensive possession from Minnesota, Jamal Murray, sitting at the end of the bench, hurls a heat pack onto the floor. Which, by the way, who the hell knows what's going to happen with that? There could very well be a suspension in place. I hope they don't suspend him, as stupid as it was, because I want to see Minnesota beat Denver at full strength. But like when I saw that, I'm like, oh, they don't get it. They think this is about the refs. It's not about the refs. The thing is if you've been watching this postseason, all eight series in the first round, they've all had, I've talked about this frequently on the show, this is the most physical playoffs I've seen. I've said that many times on the show. I think that's clear. There's a lot of shit people are getting away with. There was a play in the Lakers series where D'Angelo Russell got smacked in the face very clearly on video. It got reviewed and it didn't get overturned. The refs are letting everything go. So you had to know that coming into the series. You had to know that after game one. So one of two things is going to happen here. You're either going to blame the refs and crumble, or you're going to meet that physicality with physicality. And the fact that Michael Malone had that meltdown and Jamal Murray threw a heat pack on the floor, that's not a good sign. It was embarrassing. And from there, it's so interesting to me because I've seen a lot of basketball games like this over the years. Physical ball pressure has a tendency to speed people up. And it was crazy to see everybody on Denver get sped up to the point where they just started making mistakes. There were a lot of unforced errors in that stretch. Pocket passes into traffic that weren't open. Jamal Murray in the second half whipped a behind-the-back pass to a player that was clearly guarded underneath the basket. Like, they actually played Denver into losing their sense of focus and attention to detail. How unusual is that? They're the defending champs. They're the team that's supposed to be resilient in that type of situation. It was unbelievable. And so this is why I put in my notes, I'm so curious to see the post-game pressers, because this series is not over. Denver can go into Minnesota, win game three, and you're more or less in the position that most teams are in after you split at home in the first two, because the home team almost always wins game three. That's a buzzsaw game, right? You win game three, you're right back in this series. It's not over. Now, I think Minnesota's going to win, but it's not over. And, like, to me, it's all going to be about mentality moving forward for Denver. If you go into that locker room and you're like, I can't believe that they're letting them do this to us, it's over. You lost. It's over. Because it's not going to... Game three is going to be just like this. You can politic all you want in the presser. You can call the league office. You can send them a highlight tape like Daryl Morey of all the fouls that you thought should have been called. And game three is going to be a bloodbath again. So here's the deal. Do you want to get your hands dirty? Do you want to get down in that bloodbath and meet them at that level? Because you got some big, strong dudes. You got Jokic. You got Aaron Gordon. You got some dudes. You can do this too. But you better meet them there. Again, I said this at the beginning of the series. It's very different from the Lakers series in the sense that Denver wanted to out-execute the Lakers as a half-court offense. You have to do more damage to Minnesota's offense than they are doing to you. And the only way you're going to do that is if you meet their force with force. One of the things that Minnesota does, and by the way, this was something that stood out to me in the game, like Minnesota was getting some foul calls that were of similar types of contact to what Denver was getting. The difference is it would be like not a lot of contact, and then someone would foul and they'd call it. Minnesota from the opening tip is fouling and fouling and fouling and fouling and fouling. And they actually put the refs in a bind where they can't call it every possession. And so they get away with a lot. That's what Denver needs to do. You need to come out in game three and start fouling and fouling and fouling and grabbing and holding and top locking and denying and ball pressuring and just beating the hell out of everybody all over the floor. That's what you got to do. So if I see postgame pressers tonight and I see Mike Malone say they kicked our ass tonight and we better be ready for a damn war in game three, then I like Denver's chances to come back and do it. The same thing goes for Jamal Murray. If you go in there and you're like, oh, it's my calf. If you go in there and you're like, oh, they're fouling me like crazy and they're getting away with it. Then it's over, because that's the wrong mentality. The only way you're going to get back in this series is by meeting their force with force. For the record, I think it's too late. I think Minnesota's going to win this series now. It's not over. Of course, Denver can come back, but I think Minnesota's going to win. But the only pathway forward for Denver is that they have to meet this force with force. We're going to do a little video tomorrow where we go over some film on some more like X's and O's specifics. Today wasn't about X's and O's to me. Today was purely about sheer force of will and physicality. And Minnesota punked the Denver Nuggets tonight. They punked them, and now they're in real danger of a sweep if they don't get their shit together. We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It is an insider's look at the NBA and the culture surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall will give his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. CJ will bring his A-list comedian buddies to keep it light and fire off some hoops takes. Plus, John will be inviting current and former NBA players, friends, and teammates to join the show as well to give their unfiltered accounts of what really goes on in the league from a player's perspective. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
Angie's List is now Angie, the nation's largest home services marketplace. They're here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled professionals to get the job done well. Something I've always been a big believer in. When you try to take projects on yourself, you usually don't know what you're doing. You usually end up making mistakes, and it can be a big headache. And so not only can a professional from Angie get the job done more efficiently, but they also are people that you can support within your community as local businesses. With over 200,000 pros in their network, Angie makes it easy to research, compare, and hire pros to ensure a job is done well. With 29 years of experience, combined with new digital tools to simplify the process, Angie makes completing home projects easy. Consider Angie your hub for all your home improvement needs. They can help you find the best price for your project by comparing quotes from multiple pros in just a few taps, or book services at an upfront price based on local data. Angie has cost guides that will tell you what others have paid for similar projects both nationally and in your area, and the app is free and easy to use. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com, or download the app today. All right, moving on to Pacers-Knicks. I want to start with the end of the game, then we'll work our way backwards. So 115-115. Really interesting sequence. So Brunson had been cooking Andrew Nembhard all night long, and we're going to get into more detail on that in a few minutes. But Jalen Brunson was ISOing Andrew Nembhard kind of around the elbow on the right side of the floor. And Aaron Nesmith is guarding Dante DiVincenzo on the left wing. And he's kind of sitting down, digging down into the driving lane. Halliburton's guarding Josh Hart in the left corner. And Nesmith throws a double team at Brunson. And what I thought was really interesting is Halliburton did his windshield wiper rotation. He rotated at the same time as Nesmith. But DiVincenzo positioned himself about 5 feet behind the three-point line. It's like a deep three, you know, one of those classic Ryan Anderson threes. You old Rockets fans will remember that. And as a result of that, Halliburton's closeout just didn't matter because he was so far away from the rim. And DiVincenzo just stuck the three-pointer. And again, the big thing there is Jalen Brunson was cooking Andrew Nembhard the entire game to draw that specific double team. So DiVincenzo hits a three. It's 118-115. We go down the other end. Siakam hits like a really tough driving layup over OG Anunoby. And OG defended it well. But Siakam's big advantage in this matchup is length. And he just kind of reached out and got that scoop shot extended outside of him and put it in off the glass. Really, really impressive shot. So now it's 118-117. Then the Pacers force a turnover with some pressure on Brunson. Pressure in the backcourt that they got away with. And then pressure in the front court after a timeout. Brunson throws the ball off of Halliburton. It bounces back and hits Brunson. Now it's Pacers' ball. And we get an illegal screen called on Miles Turner. Now, for the record, I don't care about it in the context of this game. Bad calls happen in basketball games. As a player and as a team, you know that going into the game. If you let a game stay close, you're always at risk that a bad call could hurt you. Maybe even a couple of bad calls. And the Pacers got on the bad end of two bad ones at the end of this game. Not just that one, but also the kicked the Brunson pocket pass. I think it was to Hartenstein. I can't remember. But it was a pocket pass. It might have been Josh Hart. Can't remember. Brunson throws that pocket pass, and Nesmith hits it with his hand and gets called for a kickball. Like, that was a bad call. So, but, like, that's the thing. Like, as a Pacer, you got to be looking at that, like, We were on the wrong end of some bad calls today. Totally just part of the game of basketball. What I have a problem with is the larger issue that the NBA is having with officiating now. Because why in the hell was that called in that situation? That specific type of screen where it's like there's a little bit of movement, a little bit of nudge at the end. That same screen happens like 50 times in an NBA game. And it might get called once or twice. And usually in the first quarter or something like that, almost never at the end of games. And this is the larger issue. NBA refs do not understand why they're there. We have refs to facilitate basketball games. That's it. It's not about enforcing the rule book to the letter. That's not what this is about. The goal is for us to not even notice they're there. There is a lot of discretion in this job. And the discretion is, let the players decide the game, not the officials. And so what I have a problem with is when there's a call in a gray area and the ref defaults to blow the whistle. So for instance, if a ball screen's coming and you're the ref, you have to watch out for an illegal screen. You're right. And like, there have been times where the wrong end of this, what was the one? Was it that Rockets team that the Jazz, it was in the late 90s. And John, I think it was John Stockton broke free for a three at the top of the key that won the series. And there was just an obnoxious illegal screen. like someone looked like, you know, like Zach Martin pulling and blocking him like he's a pulling guard. You have to call it if it's outrageous, if it's outside of that gray area. But what bothers me is inside of that gray area when refs default to blowing the whistle. It makes no sense to me. Like, that dude was looking for an excuse to blow the whistle, which means he doesn't understand why he was there. You're not there to blow the whistle. You're there to facilitate a basketball game. And I thought the Anthony Edwards tech is another example. All he did was walk over and stare. There have been a dozen more boisterous trash-talking sessions or complaints just in the few games since then that went uncalled as technicals, which means that ref was just waiting for a reason. And we have to find a way to get that out of the game. There needs to be like an overhaul of the way that we train refs to help them understand that when things are in the gray area, we would prefer to watch the players determine the outcome. And that means not gifting a team a point over a stare down. And that means not calling every damn illegal screen, or you could call a carry on every possession. If you slow the game down and watch in slow motion, almost every ball handler puts their hand a little bit under the ball and the ball stops spinning. By the book, that's a carry. But somehow we have discretion there. And that was just so frustrating because that was such an entertaining basketball game. back and forth. Pacers are playing really well. Brunson hits a bunch of big shots late. You're in this dogfight, and all of a sudden, you get this amazing Siakam layup and this big-time defensive play from the Pacers to get the ball back, and they don't even get a shot because of a really iffy illegal screen. I had a huge problem with that call. But let's get back to the game at large. So obviously, after the illegal screen, the Knicks close the game out at the foul line, then it's over from there, right? On the Knicks front, Brunson was just unreal. He burnt Andrew Nembhard to a crisp in that game and literally forced the Pacers to double-team him at the end in that same matchup, which led to the eventual game winner from Dante DiVincenzo. Now the most consecutive 40-point playoff game since Michael Jordan. That's some rare company for you there. I was thinking about this earlier. You could make the case that Brunson has been the best small guard in the league this year. Like last year, it was Stephen Dame. I think you could say that Jalen Brunson and Donovan Mitchell have kind of made their move on that corner. Again, it's a small sample. You want to see it sustained. But within this season, the two best small guards have been Jalen Brunson and Donovan Mitchell. They've been killing. And on that note, what I thought was really interesting, I couldn't believe the stat when I saw it. I was scrolling through Instagram earlier today. So there are 8 teams remaining, right? That means, what, 40 starters? 6 players out of those 40 are over 30 years old. How interesting is that? Like, the younger, like, when we talk about experience now, it doesn't seem to mean as much. The younger guys are taking over the league. 6 players over 30 in the starting lineups out of 40 remaining here in the second round. I thought that was super fascinating. Dante DiVincenzo and Josh Hart, bunch of timely scoring, that huge and one late from Josh Hart. Got a couple of big offensive rebounds too. Dante DiVincenzo, not just that three, really lively as a shot creator all night. The starting lineup, just the starters for the Knicks, scored 118 points. And then one of the big things that I wanted to shout out, I thought Dante DiVincenzo did an unbelievable job on Tyrese Halliburton. And this kind of goes back to what we were talking about with Jamal Murray earlier. But Dante DiVincenzo, when you like what happened with Murray, they're pressuring him full court. They're randomly trapping him. They're being physical all over the place. And it plays Jamal into this, like, not just poor shooting, but poor decision-making, right? I thought Halliburton was really bad down the stretch of this game and super passive throughout. And a big part of that was Dante DiVincenzo just got up in his grill, got physical and handsy, and threw him out of whack. What was I talking about in the Nugget series? Like, oh, they were trying to force pocket passes that weren't there. They weren't seeing help defenders that were there. What happened with Halliburton at the end of this game? There was that random pocket pass that he tried to force when nothing was open. It was a turnover. There was the play where he was driving along the right side, and OG Anunoby was guarding the strong side corner, and Halliburton just didn't even see him, and OG went in and swiped the ball free. I think that was the play where he went down the other end and got the dunk. There was like a play where he came off a ball screen and picked up his dribble for no reason, and then threw like this crazy lob back across the court to Miles Turner. And I'm like, whoa, like he's losing his focus and decision-making now. And so like, again, it's a much smaller version of what the Timberwolves did to the Nuggets, but Dante DiVincenzo's individual defense on Halliburton did a number on the Pacers. It was a big part of why they had to lean so much on Andrew Nembhard late in the game, who, by the way, was really good, but so it worked out. But they had to lean a lot on Nembhard and Siakam late in the game because DiVincenzo basically like just pressured Halliburton out of it. Now, I know Halliburton hasn't really looked the same since he got back from his hamstring injury, but like this is playoff basketball, and it looks like it's going to be playoff basketball for the foreseeable future. And so Halliburton's got to, I don't know if it's putting on a little bit more muscle or just getting better at handling ball pressure, but he's got to figure that out because that problem is not going away in this series. DiVincenzo's going to be in his grill in game 2, and he's going to be in his grill in game 3, and he's going to be in his grill in game 4. And if you somehow get some success on DiVincenzo and they switch him off, it'll probably be Deuce McBride doing the exact same thing. On the Pacers front, I was really, really surprised with the matchups that Indiana went with. I talked about before the series, I thought Nesmith should guard Brunson and that they should put Nembhard on DiVincenzo and then put a Halliburton on Josh Hart. Obviously, some rebounding issues there with Josh Hart, but you can rebound as a team. There are ways to address that at the team level. I thought that Neesmith gave the best combination of size, strength, physicality, and athleticism on the ball on Brunson. And I thought with DiVincenzo being the secondary creator, Nembhard would be a good matchup there. Nembhard on Brunson, I just didn't get. He's not very big and he's not very strong. He's a good guard defender, but Brunson's playing at an insanely high level. And the main thing I noticed early in the game, first possession, Brunson just walks him down to the right block and easily shoots a fadeaway over the top of him. Brunson feels really comfortable shooting over the top of Nembhard. Here's why that matters. The Sixers series was not like that. Jalen did not feel comfortable shooting a pull-up jumper like straight up face-to-face against Kelly Oubre or Nick Batum to the same degree that he does against Nembhard. Famously in game 5, if I remember correctly, that was the overtime game, and Brunson tried to shoot a pull-up three and Batum guessed and like almost blocked it, and Brunson threw the ball out of bounds. Because length is something that bothers pull-up shots when you're face-to-face, right? So what Brunson did against the Sixers is he found soft spots in pick and roll. He'd get Batum or Oubre into trail position on a ball screen and try to get some separation in the ball screen, and then he'd hit something in the middle before he got to Embiid. Very different type of shot making, which, by the way, is why I talked about in this series the Pacers putting more of like a I talked about after the Sixers series too, just more of like a Bruce Brown archetype, like a low center of gravity, bigger, stronger guard that can flatten out some of Brunson's drives. The problem is when he's too small, like Nembhard, he can just too easily shoot over the top. And so didn't like that matchup. Dante DiVincenzo was really good in this whole game. I didn't understand putting Halliburton on him, because DiVincenzo was getting comfortable and was active as a scorer in this game. One of the big things that down the stretch that was interesting, we talked about from 115 on, but a big part of the Knicks scoring down the stretch before 115 was ghost screens guard screens with Dante DiVincenzo, which we talked about in the series preview was going to be a huge part of the Knicks offense. They were going to try to get better matchups through guard screens. So what they did is they kept getting Brunson downhill by having Halliburton's man set the screen, DiVincenzo. Halliburton would hedge, but Halliburton was doing a bad job of hedging. Like again, your one job on the hedge is to cut off the drive. But Halliburton was bailing on the hedge and kind of even getting in the way of Nembhard. So Brunson was able to get downhill easily. And again, DiVincenzo scored a bunch in this game. And so like you want to hedge and recover on a guy that's not a good movement shooter. And so that's where it makes more sense for me to, in my opinion, to put him on Josh Hart. Now, of course, if you put him on Josh Hart, you're going to open up some issues on the glass. But again, Josh Hart was doing damage on the glass anyway. That's a team concept. You have to rebound as a team, right? So a big adjustment that I'm expecting from Indiana, either expecting in game 2 or hoping for in game 2, I would move Neesmith over to Brunson so that you have a bigger, stronger, taller athlete that can at least bother Brunson's over-the-top shooting, right? Then I would put Nembhard on DiVincenzo. So if they run guard screens with DiVincenzo, you can just switch at that point at least. Or you could try to fight through. Or if you hedge and recover, it's a better athlete guard who can do a better job of hedging and recovering out to DiVincenzo. And then if you try to bring Josh Hart into those screens and you have Josh Hart screen and you have Halliburton hedge, you don't have to worry about the movement shooting aspect that DiVincenzo brings to the table. So I'd like to see the Pacers kind of mix up all their matchups in game 2, but I guess we'll see. I want to shout out a couple guys for the Pacers, though. I thought Aaron Neesmith was awesome with his slashing, especially late in the game. That dunk that he had on Mitchell Robinson was disgusting. That was a really, really good playoff dunk. Andrew Nembhard's shot creation late had a couple of big-time driving layups that were really high-level plays. Had a short little pull-up jumper, too. It was big-time that he stepped up the way he did because Halliburton was struggling so much. And then Pascal Siakam. Again, he's got one of the toughest defensive matchups in the series because OG is kind of constructed to make him shoot over the top or at least around him to the sides. And Siakam just had a couple of really big shots. He had that short pull-up jumper, the step back late, and then he had that big scoop layup that got it down to 118-117. So going to be a really good series. I'd like to see the Pacers mix up the matchups. Halliburton has to be better, just in general, regardless of circumstance. Tyrese Halliburton, you're the leader of this team. You have to find a way to be more impactful offensively. And again, handling that ball pressure is going to be key. But this is going to be a really fun series. I think you saw some of the advantages that the Pacers have. TJ McConnell was unbelievable. TJ McConnell's dribble penetration is just like one of those things that I think is like a lot of people in the league don't even realize. Like TJ is literally one of the very best guards in the league at just beating people off the dribble. I was watching him tonight, just like cleanly toasting, you know, guys like Dante DiVincenzo and Deuce McBride off the dribble and getting into the lane relatively easily. He's added that, you know, that little mid-range pull-up jump shot. He's a very good passer as well. Just an unbelievable competitor. Big-time night from TJ McConnell. But again, shout-out to the Knicks. Shout-out to Jalen Brunson. Playing at the highest four-game stretch as a scorer since Michael Jordan. Going to be a fun series. All right, guys. I feel like that entire episode was just me yelling. It was crazy. It was a crazy night. All right, guys, that is all I have for tonight. I'm planning on doing something small tomorrow, just a little bit of film, probably on Wolves Nuggets, just talking about how they kind of got them out of their out of whack mentally. But I appreciate you guys for supporting the show. Don't forget, we had series previews earlier this morning for Celtics, Cavs, and Mavs Thunder. You can find that on our YouTube feed. And then we're also going live tomorrow night after those game ones. I will see you guys then.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yeah, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.